Pop the Music Bubble by Joseph Johnson. The Project. For this project, I explored materials from BGSU's Music Library and Bill Shirk's Sound Archives, and I found resources that related to the history of Black music in the United States. In addition, I also put together a list of resources that we do not have that I thought were important when it came to discussions about Black music history. Then after that, I worked on producing a podcast that is still in the production process that is focused on retelling stories and telling the history of important and underrepresented African-American musicians and composers. The research. There were a lot of different things that I had to deal with when doing this project. The first one was learning how to navigate the collections. As a student worker at the music library, I was fortunate to already have training in how to navigate the collections. However, there was a great deal of materials that I did not know how to work with. So part of the project was really a learning curve, trying to figure out how to work with all the different collections that we had and how to navigate and sort through everything and find the things that were truly meaningful. Once I figured out how to do all of these things, I found a vast number of resources in our collections that I didn't know existed before I started the project. However, as I started formulating episode plans and how I wanted to structure my episodes, I noticed there was a gap in the digital collections, specifically about banjo traditions. Before doing Pop the Music Bubble, I had already started doing research on Black banjo music, and I wanted to specifically make that episode the most interesting and engaging with the large variety of materials. However, due to the limited research that has been done on Black banjo traditions, it was something that I had to put together myself. In addition to that, the last episode of the series was talking about classical musicians and contemporary Black musicians that exist in like the classical world. However, there wasn't a whole lot specifically on Black musicians and Black musicians of color in the classical world at the music library. However, that's not just an issue with the music library, that's more of a larger issue with music academia. Therefore, I had to write a lot of new things that had to do with living Black composers, and even especially Florence Price, who is a rather well-known Black composer, who there were very, very limited resources available in general on her. So a lot of what I did for her, I had to either write myself or I had to pull from things that were not published. However, I did notice that there was a lot of stuff on jazz, which actually didn't surprise me, because jazz was a style, and is a style, that has been heavily researched, and I know that with our great jazz department here, it didn't surprise me that there was a lot of resources on that. However, there was also not a whole lot on minstrelsy, which kind of surprised me, because in other research I've done in other libraries, I found a great deal on minstrelsy and monologues and minstrel music and all of these different sorts of things. So it was interesting that most of the things that I was finding on minstrelsy were just kind of the large, not really the more vague materials that were discussing like kind of what minstrelsy was, but not really specifics about performers or what was going on with that. So that was an interesting thing to look at. I thought that minstrelsy was a really important topic that I hit on during the series, just because of how many issues are surrounding minstrelsy and how important it was when it came to Black-white racial tensions, when it came to like music production and sale. In addition, there was a good amount of stuff that was, there were a good amount of materials that were available on popular musicians for the pop music episode. That was episode 5. However, it was really difficult because there was really so much actually on that it was difficult trying to pare it down and find the things that I thought were really valuable. So when working on this project, the hardest part was really, one of the harder parts was writing the episodes, actually. I have had experience writing academic papers for classes, presenting at conferences, and doing those sorts of things. However, I noticed that my writing can be very jargony and very full of, you know, just things that are typical in musicology papers. So one of the issues that I started with really early on was really defining my terms in a way that was understandable and accessible to people that were not music academics. So that was something that was difficult that my advisor definitely helped me on. If there was ever a term that I said or like a concept that I kind of glossed over, he would go over and help me try to formulate ways and words that could be used to help describe it to a wider audience. In addition to the help with my advisor, I also found a number of resources online and through the library on how to write for public audiences as an academic. However, though there were a couple of things with that, I feel like it did represent an issue with the academy because it was very limited as to the amount of resources that were available toward public work. In addition to that, with writing difficulties, since we were dealing with sound and I really wanted to use actual music in the podcast and incorporate it, there were some issues when it, really early on when it came to navigating copyright. Because with copyright, there's rules about how long you can use and academic licensing and all these different sorts of things. So we really had to go through and make sure that we were using things that were either not copyrighted or we had to use things that were copyrighted in a very limited format. This is why, as the episodes get further along in history, closer to the present day, the audio clips are getting much shorter and much more brief. And there are even songs that I talk about that are not even that are not even sampled in the podcast, just to help avoid those types of issues. In addition to that, when I was looking for people to perform, I was trying to find sheet music that was also not copyrighted, because then that would get into more issues when it came to performance rights and composition credits and all these other things as well. The next issue that I had when working on Pop the Music Bubble was issues with scheduling. One of the things I wanted to do originally was record student musicians playing some of the music and incorporate that into the podcast. So everyone has a very complicated schedule, so it was hard to find times that met with that and working with recording studios' availability with all the things that were going on throughout the semester. There was also issues finding scores for musicians that weren't copyrighted or were easy to like work around the copyright issues that I talked about before, while still making them interesting and engaging. In addition to that, when it came to scheduling with recording services, I was having issues finding a student worker there who was experienced or had any knowledge when it came to working with podcasts. So that was something I definitely had to deal with. I asked Mike Lorello, who's the head of recording services, if he knew of anyone or if he knew of anybody that would be able to do this. And we were having trouble trying to sort that out with the schedule wise. So once we were starting to get the delicate schedule organized, the university announced that classes were going to be put online and campus was going to close. So due to this, we had to start reorganizing the schedule. But then when they announced that campus was going to be closed for the rest of the semester, many of the musicians and people I was going to work with ended up leaving town. Recording services stopped operations as well. Therefore, I needed to restructure the episodes that were more focused around the student performers to be focused around recordings. I also had to find recordings that would meet and match the things I had already done research on. And that was a difficult task in and of itself. And then after that, I had to, there was sort of a scramble to get to the library to get all of the materials that I needed, both books, scores, and recording and audio files, before everything shut down. So during my social isolation, it became rather difficult to continue writing and restructuring. So that was a very hard struggle to deal with. As I'm sure a lot of people have had issues with. Luckily, I was able to transfer funds that I was going to spend on recording services, getting all of that work done, and I was able to purchase the Blue Yeti X, which was a microphone usually used for podcasting and sometimes music recording and production on the internet. Then I had to create a recording space in my college apartment, which is very difficult considering I have, you know, four housemates and I also have neighbors that to deal with. So finding a studio and creating a studio space was rather difficult. So I basically started recording in my closet. I started moving furniture and clothes around so that I was able to set up a mini studio in there. In addition to that, since I didn't really have a recording tech to help me out with the sound recording and the actual producing, I had to work on editing the sound myself, which was a whole other project in and of itself. It was something I was interested in, but I'd never really seriously pursued until now. And I'm still working on learning how to make the podcast work the way that I wanted it to. Luckily, one of my friends used to work for recording services, and since he is also not working, I was able to contact him and work with him on figuring out how to deal with some of the issues and roadblocks that I was coming through with setting up the tech for recording and also when it came to the editing process. As I was recording, and as I am currently recording the episodes, I realized that my initial plan of reading a script verbatim, the way that I had done with my conference presentations, was not very interesting or engaging as an audience member. So I eventually switched to a different mode of production, where I turned the scripts that I had already written into kind of broad bullet points, where I would speak kind of freely upon the bulleted ideas that I had listed with a couple of quotes written out that I thought were really important pieces of text to include. Specifically, those were more of the sentences that I was talking about before when it came to making it accessible for public audiences. So the sentences that I crafted that would be well, easily understood were ones that I like would read verbatim. So even though the production process is still underway, I do have a rough cut of the second episode, which is the one focused on Black banjo traditions in minstrelsy and American folk music. So here's a quick example of what some of the podcasts are going to look like. Another highly influential figure in Black string band music is Sid Hemphill. A really popular song that he recorded in 1942 was The Ballad of John Henry. Though the song has been recorded numerous times by numerous musicians, his recording is rather underplayed. The tune tells the story of John Henry, who is a Black folk hero. Jacob Blunt also recorded a version of his tune in a 2016 album, Reparations. This album was intended to reclaim the history that was taken from his Black ancestors. In his version of the song, he records with fiddle player Tatiana Hargraves from the Source Recording.
When you hear that bulldog barking, somebody's ran, somebody's ran. When you hear that bulldog barking, somebody's ran, somebody's ran.
Recently, an all-female group consisting of Rhiannon Giddens, Amethyst Kia, Layla McCalla, and Allison Russell re-recorded this tune, but they restructured a lot of the text to talk about John Henry's wife, Polly Ann.
Polly, can you lift that hammer? Yes, I can. Yes, I can. I can swing it. I can strike it harder than any.
After this, I'm going to need to eventually transcribe all of this so I can have a manuscript for accessibility purposes, which will be another project in and of itself. And then, yeah. So in conclusion, I didn't realize how big of a scope this project was. I had a lot of ideas and a lot of ideas for the things that I wanted to write about. And I realized that I was, this was a rather ambitious project, and I was unable to write and edit and do research on all the different topics that I wanted. So I eventually chose to go with five or six episodes that hit the topics that I thought were really important. However, though I wasn't able to touch on everything that I wanted to, it gave me a lot of really great ideas for projects for the future as I continue my research on Black music. In addition to that, it also gave me a lot of opportunities, a really great opportunity to learn about the music of Black Americans in the United States. And it really allowed me to really just reconnect with that type of music that I haven't been studying as much in music school. And hopefully, by the end of this project, it's going to allow others to be able to basically do the same thing and learn about. Hopefully it'll allow others to also be able to do the same thing and learn more about these really important Black musicians that we don't talk about as much. Thank you.